knowledge fight. Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a fan. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Celine, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are. Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question for you.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today, buddy?
My bright spot today is I'd like to thank folks who have chipped in over at our GoFundMe fundraiser.
Oh, indeed.
And also, this bright spot comes with a little blah. And that is that I added a note to the campaign just to say, hey, all the buttons have been sent out.
Sure.
We appreciate anybody chipping in, but don't think that you're not going to get a button
if you do the thing.
Right. That ship has sailed.
Right.
I added a little note on there.
Just a nice little thing.
Not knowing that when you add a note, they now have to review your fundraiser and they take it offline.
Oh, my God.
So it's all paused
all right.
now. So
cool.
I hope by the time this episode comes out, it will actually be able to accept donations. But
I'm glad I got another one in before the note hit.
Feel real dumb. Didn't know that about GoFundMe's policies. But it's the thought that counts, I guess. Mm-hmm. So thank you to everybody. Very nice folks. What's your bright spot?
My bright spot is this will require a slight bit of context.
Sure.
My wife and I, we go to this yoga class, and there's one yoga teacher who has very clearly taken me on as a bit of a favorite.
Is this the, for folks who don't hang out with Jordan and I when there's no one else around,
right.
They don't know about this. Is this the one who's a little aggro?
No, well, maybe. I mean, I can't remember which one I've described as such, but she's
like
she's,
to bend really hard.
She's like a borderline elderly woman who
is absolutely
ripped. Like her history is dancer, acrobat, bodybuilder, she's
you described one as one of the leaders as being like borderline sadistic.
Yes, there is definitely
that's not the same person.
No, not the same person. Okay. No, this woman is she's clearly chosen me as her favorite, right? And so my wife went one day without me, and the feeling she had of like. Immediate, the teacher was going like, oh, Jordan didn't come with you? And then the change in demeanor.
Then she got sadistic towards...
my wife comes home and she proceeds to roast me for a good 10-15 minutes on my subpar yoga ability, the unfairness of her choosing me, all of this stuff. And it was so fucking funny.
Yeah.
I could not stop laughing for 20 minutes.
It is funny how you're...
It was so funny.
Your wife's insecurity leads to her lashing out at you.
It was so funny. It was incredibly funny.
You suck at yoga.
Oh, man. It was incredible how funny
it was. That borderline elderly lady should love me.
I had to leave the room for an hour to laugh about that.
I bet she loved that.
It was great.
I'm sure she was thrilled with your response.
No, she loved it. Yeah. She won. Yeah. That was great.
All right.
It was awesome. Yeah. I couldn't have been happier.
Well, that's a lovely marriage moment to share with the audience.
It's so funny.
Good times.
What's your bright spot?
My bright spot is... so, Jordan, today we have an episode to go over, and we're going to be talking more in the past.
Hey!
We're sticking around in the past because we got to get there for the live show.
We're barreling towards the screen.
Yes. Some people, I think, have some negative feelings, or at least they prefer modern-day episodes to... episodes
of
the past.
Some people
and I understand that. You know, Alex's voice is really annoying in the past, but I would argue his voice in the present is pretty annoying too.
I mean, the audio quality has changed terribly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that there's meat on bones in the past. I think there's a couple of things that we get to talk about in this episode that are so far afield from anything that comes up in the present day stuff that it's just it's the difference between a good and a bad improv suggestion. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, I feel like we're at every episode we do, we're trying to bring you the best episode possible. And I'll tell you what, you may think you want a present day Alex episode.
Sure.
But then if you get it, you might find, I wish we had gone into the past.
Right. And then, you know.
So trust Dan with your goddamn choices.
And, you know, look, well, we will talk about the present as sure. soon as Alex Jones's .live comes back online.
As long as that painting show is still in the works.
We will keep everyone posted on that.
Yeah.
And we'll be back in the present. But like this need to get to the scream for the live show.
Crucial.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I got nothing.
Yeah. No. It is absolutely necessary, or we will have a weird Friday night. We'll just let DJ Danner keep play for the entire.
Sure.
Yeah, that would be
That's
great.
That's an option.
Yeah, people would love that.
So today we're going to be talking about January 9th through 12th, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Friday and a Monday, so
okay.
The weekend shot sure. not involved.
Gotcha.
Like I said, there's some amazing stuff that goes down on mm-hmm. this episode. A lot of immigrant hating and some weirdos.
Sure.
And the last clip, I think, is spectacular and revelatory in a way that will blow minds.
Wow.
So we'll get down to business on this.
Man, when you tease things, it's dangerous.
Well, look, this is pretty big. This is nuts, this
All right.
last clip.
All right.
But before we get down to business, let's take a little moment and say hello to some new wonks.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So first, 90s cartoons are fabulous. You guys are just like Norbert and Daggett from Angry Beavers. Check it out. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much. I always assumed we were real monsters.
I assumed we were Mr. Peabody and that kid.
That one is really hard to avoid.
That was not a 90s cartoon.
No,
though.
That one's pretty much dead on.
Maybe we're cat dog. I don't know. I these are outside of my
sure.
cartoon realm. I
sure.
don't think I ever watched Angry Beavers.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're not X-Men.
Ren and Stimpy.
We are definitely not Ren and Stimpy.
Next, Late Night Pooper Jones. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Matt in Toronto, proudly conducting globalist mind control experiments on my unsuspecting suburban neighbors. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Alex lost his neck in the info war. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
And hello, I've been trying to contact you regarding your vehicle's limited woke insurance. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
And we got a couple technocrites in the mix, Jordan. So
yep.
First, the pirated NFT of Roger Stone's presidential pardon. Thank you so much. You are All now right. a technocrat. And non-Christian Christian, also known as Mordam, you have risen above your enemies. You may not quit tomorrow. You can take as many breaks as you need. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bom, 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 bom. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent. He's a loser little titty baby. I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Now, we jump in. In 2004, January 2004, and we're in a situation where apparently the Ba'ath Party is still in charge of
really?
Iraq.
Really?
Well,
still?
We haven't gotten an update on it.
Oh, okay.
You know?
I was going to say
no.
we were going to get an update still
no,
today.
No, that's still
okay.
hanging in the air.
All right, okay.
We haven't gotten
okay.
any kind of correction or clarification,
right,
so as
gotcha.
Best we know, they are still
sure.
running shop. We also are in a situation where the Democratic primaries are heating up quite a bit.
True.
And Alex is not talking about it at all.
No.
There is, compared to how obsessed he is
yeah.
with like electoral politics in the present day, he does not give a single fuck at this point.
Do you know what's crazy? I feel like it makes sense in that like people, when they get older, they care more about voting. That's been the stereotype in America for how many years?
That might be the case, but I think, I mean, I still think voting is important now, but
sure.
like I think I cared more when I was younger.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But then again, I wasn't inundated with like an entire world of people who, no matter what the election result is, they'll claim they won.
Sure.
So that kind of has a little bit of a demotivating
effect. Right. We were raised in a world where if you stole an election, the polite thing to do was pretend that it wasn't stolen by the Supreme Court.
Right, and at least get the Supreme Court to like go cha-junk.
Yep. Yeah, get a stamp.
But it is just, it's wild to me to be listening to this and knowing what's going on in, like, the news and, like, normal news shows. And, and it just completely absent from Alex's coverage. Pretty wild.
Yeah, I mean, especially because people didn't know about it back then. You know, like, in the current world we live in, we know about the incursions of the insanity upon on the real world. Back then, this whole area was untouched.
Well, but
you know?
but also, even more than that, this is what Alex is supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this feels...
He's above the left-right paradigm at this point in
time. It feels right that he's not meddling around and talking about the dynamics of the Democratic primary or Hillary's going to run or whatever the fuck he would be doing at this point.
They're all globalists, should have been his guiding light from day one.
Except
everyone
Ron Paul.
In politics... Yeah. Except Ron Paul. Day one, everyone in politics is a globalist, regardless of whether or not I think they're on my team.
And anybody who's related to Ron Paul.
but it only makes
the
sense...
The only good politicians are Paul family members.
Right. But it makes sense for him because the only people that he would like in his worldview must...
Can't win.
By definition, be deceiving him for the globalists. You know, like a Trump or whatever. That is so attractive to Alex. That's clearly a plant.
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's made to fuck him up.
Well, and the other side of it is that if someone is the real McCoy, they by definition can't win.
Exactly.
So you always
because
have
the
to
globalists
be backing
are
losers.
Yeah. Because the globalists won't allow them to win.
So why get caught up in the
insane
system? You know,
insane.
It's a self defeating thing to care about electoral politics if you're Alex, and it makes sense at this point.
Yep.
Fuck Bush. I don't
totally.
Care about the primary.
Absolutely.
Who cares?
I'm with you.
So anyway, Alex begins on January 9th here talking about Saddam.
Sure.
There's some news.
How's he doing?
In the last 30 minutes. The latest info on Saddam Hussein supposedly having cancer and some of his top minions being killed.
Oh,
in
I hope
US.
He doesn't get
that
killed by cancer.
Custody. We're just controlled by the parasite like...
Scalar attack!
Wake up, boys, there's a light at the window.
So this is the second time in about a week or two that Alex's feed has just abruptly dropped in the middle of him saying a word.
Yeah.
Both times that Revolution song plays.
Revolution. Yeah.
That tells me that this is like an automatic thing that Alex has set up. Where if he goes offline, that track kicks in. Because he has a feed that goes to Genesis Communications.
Right.
And so, like, if his connection to that feed gets cut off, then Genesis must start playing this song.
Right. Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's how the relay is set up.
Like, stopgap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would have brought this up the last time that it happened, because it's so jarring. But it was in that no man's land of boring episodes, and his response actually was pretty chill. He laughed it off and said that happens sometimes.
Sure.
And made it clear that people shouldn't think it was any kind of an attempt to take him off air. Like, nowadays, any tech problems, that's a globalist attack.
Yeah.
Even if it's just the crew playing the wrong clip. So Alex being so cool about a pretty severe tech issue was notable, but not really all that interesting.
Yeah.
Now we have a second data point, so we have to see how he reacts to this one.
Well, let's find out.
What do you think? You know some of the dynamics here.
Oh, man.
How do you think he's going to respond? Is it a conspiracy? Is it not?
Well, one, first and most important part. They chose that song specifically because were Alex to be taken off by the globalists, that is an appropriate song to play.
I think it's also royalty free.
Well, let's be generous.
Maybe it's like one of the like weird patriot friends of Alex. Yeah. Didn't want to promote.
Could be. I'm going to say that he is annoyed. I'm going to say he's frustrated and he says... I can't believe this is still happening. That's my guess. My guess is still happening.
So, like, incompetent...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. First time is a mistake that happens. Second time, now it's incompetence.
Well, here's where we land.
It's been so many years, so many tears. We have lost once before. Now we'll settle the score. When our cannons will roar.
doing?
All right, folks.
Oh, we're back.
Jones back live. When I got to the studio today, I noticed the phone company was doing something with the different digital lines. And there's no one from the phone company outside the office. There's just a black wire strung running right along the side of my office.
All right.
So that's the connection up to Minnesota and the folks running the show and the satellite uplinks. We'll
maybe
we'll
have more than one wire.
Have the show today and have Glenn Spencer on and to have Joel Skousen and Keith Parker and, of course, Paul Watson. Hmm. And if we keep having problems, I'm going to jump in the car and drive 80 miles an hour to the other studio.
Ooh. Yeah,
this never happens once or twice a year, and now it's happening, and I'm beginning to think it's deliberate. In fact, the British media caught it on tape.
I'm sorry?
About 3 years ago, they were here in Austin, and there were people that, quote, didn't work for the phone company continually in the big box down the road every day when I went on the air. So one day I just started running a song. I went on air, drove down, and caught the guy in there. Another time I had somebody walk up the side of the studio, and there was just a cut wire out there. They just cut the digital line. Oh, yeah, there's not a new world order, folks.
What?
There's no such thing as that.
So I guess it's a conspiracy after
yeah,
all.
Yeah, I was going to say, I felt like I was on it for a little bit, and then it went to...
People
Black
are
went,
cutting
yeah,
the cords,
yeah,
and there's somebody
yeah.
always at the box.
Yep, yep, yep.
Yeah, I was disappointed by this. I really appreciated his just being like, yeah, this tech stuff happens. We're not the biggest show in the world.
I got
an uplink to Minnesota. That's how the show ends up getting there, and, you know, whatever. Now he's got, because it's happening more, he's got a...
The smallest amount of humility goes a long way.
It does, but it doesn't stick around, it turns out.
No, that's why it goes a long way, because mm-hmm. it's very rare.
Also, the British media, I think he's talking about John Ronson.
Yeah, that would make way more sense.
So maybe we should call John and see if he caught saboteurs.
Oh, that'd be fun if we had John on as a guest for a 2003 episode. John, what was it like back in 2003 in the olden times?
Did you catch saboteurs trying to take Alex off air? I imagine not. Anyway, we get to this Saddam story, right? This big story about Saddam and his cancer.
Report, Saddam Hussein has cancer. And this was announced on some of the Asian television channels in Taiwan and other areas. And we did find a news article out of the Sophie Morning News. Report, Saddam Hussein has cancer. The ousted Iraqi dictator, who is currently under custody with the coalition forces, suffers from cancer of lymph glands. Oh, of course, it's super fast and terminal. Kuwaiti Al-Naab Daily reads, citing an Iraq official, according to the Daily, the disease is in an advanced stage, so doctors predict the former dictator would probably live a couple of years more. Doctors came out with the fatal diagnosis while making thorough medical checks of Saddam Hussein at his capture near the hometown of Tikrit in December 2003. Allegations of Saddam Hussein's illness appeared during the military campaign in Iraq last year, when one of his private doctors residing in Syria claimed that the former dictator suffered from cancer. Oh, how convenient. Just like in
Is
about a
convenient?
Week and a half after the announcement, Jack Ruby dropped dead from super fast cancer. Kind of like the Shah was fine and got flown into England and died real quick of that fast cancer, but I'm sure he really does have it, and just a coincidence, of course it is.
So the obvious implication here is that the globalists gave these people fast-acting cancers to kill them as a way of covering up how they were the ones pulling the strings behind people like the Shah and Jack Ruby.
I guess.
Jack Ruby stood trial, and then 3 years later, he was diagnosed with lung cancer.
So quick!
He died of a pulmonary embolism, likely related to that cancer, which isn't necessarily suspicious. He was going to get a new trial, but it wasn't really at question whether or not he killed Oswald. It was just a matter of whether he acted premeditatedly and if his death sentence was appropriate.
Yeah.
The Shah died in 1980, but he'd been diagnosed privately with cancer as early as 1974.
Right.
As for Saddam, there's nothing. There's reporting going back to at least 1996 that doctors had been treating him for lymphatic cancer.
Sure.
Then in 2000, there was a string of stories about the reports that Saddam was secretly ill, but of course, a lot of this was very difficult to reach any concrete conclusion on. Opposition forces were often cited as the source of that intel, and the Baghdad embassy would deny the stories, which all makes sense.
Right.
The opposition would want to paint Saddam as weakened,
of course,
the embassy would be concerned about the effect that of disclosing Saddam having cancer, what could that do to the oil markets?
Of course.
It's not clear if he had cancer, and he refused to have a biopsy after he was captured, but it is possible that he did have cancer, because there's definitely a family history.
Yeah, sure.
He was tried and then executed in 2006, so whatever smarmy bullshit Alex is trying to imply really doesn't make any sense. And
nope.
It's just another example of how horrible his prediction track record is.
It is funny. It is very funny to me, the idea of Saddam being captured and then a doctor taking a biopsy and being like, listen, Saddam, this has never happened to me before. You have fatal cancer and stuff, but that's the least of your problems, right? Mm. How crazy is that? Like, it's almost a good news diagnosis for you to have fatal cancer. Like, what does it matter at this point, right? Who fucking cares?
Good news, bad news. The bad news is you're going to be executed when you're tried. Good news is you have cancer.
You have cancer, so
comparatively,
who cares?
I guess.
Who cares?
Also, I just love Alex being smug and talking this shit. Well, in reality, he doesn't seem to know that these reports of Saddam having cancer, it's nothing really new.
No.
It's, you know, 7 years history of these reports coming out.
Yeah.
If he's going to cover this story, you'd think he would have an awareness that this isn't news, but he's acting like it's coming out of nowhere to conveniently get Saddam out of the way quick.
Right.
This is just a sad display of, like, pretend expertise.
Yep.
So what happens when you just skim these headlines and then make up stories about shit?
Yeah. It would be nice for the people who say things. It would be nice if there was not an inverse relationship between the confidence with which you say something and how much you know about it.
Mm.
That is a huge issue for most of humanity.
It is.
Yeah.
It definitely is.
Oh!
So it's not just Saddam. Uh-huh. It's also associates of his that need to be discussed.
Also, unofficial sources to Al Bawaba, Saddam's presidential secretary, dies in U.S. custody. And there are omitted reports here of them killing people with electric shocks. So powerful, they're killing them. They're putting them into comas.
Yeah, we only reserve that for prisoners and stuff.
It's chic. It's like the latest hairstyle or clothing push. It's just wonderful. It's a torture chic.
So this is a story that Alex is reading from Rents.com, which is a website run by nutball conspiracy theorist Jeff Rents, who happens to hate Alex and
gotcha.
The feeling is mutual.
Okay.
This story is about Abid al-Tikriti, who was Saddam's secretary, but it's also not true. Or at least the reports that he was killed in U.S. custody aren't true.
Mm.
He was tried and then executed in 2012. As we see with just about everything involving his Iraq coverage, Alex is a really bad source of information. He's not someone with any journalistic standards. So you wouldn't expect him to resist covering this story on that count, but he loves to pretend that his gut instincts are so precise and always accurate, so you would think he would have picked up a scent on this. Like, maybe there's nothing to fact check, but his gut, which is 99% accurate.
Especially since this whole article he's reading is clearly, like, not the usual. Like, it's a website devoted to the many different productions of Rent, I assume.
Rents.
So Rents.
R-E-N-S-E. I understand. Look, you know how many productions of Rent there have been?
I don't feel shame.
You know how many productions there have been?
Tons of them.
525,600.
Oh, no, you got me. You
Boom.
Got me. Well done. Well done. You win. You win this round.
Yeah, you didn't think I knew that song,
I didn't
did you?
See it coming. I didn't see it coming.
I only know that song because the movie Rent came out when I worked at a movie theater.
Yeah.
And I had to
that
clean
makes sense.
During the credits. And that song played.
On
so
a
I heard
loop.
That song like 4 times a day.
Gotcha.
Oof.
Yep. Can you do that as good as Wild One?
25,600
DJ
minutes. How do you measure a year in the life?
Oh, yeah.
Talk about
beauty.
Life. I don't know any more than that, though.
Yeah, that's plenty. Yeah. That's more than anyone needs.
So there's a lot of immigrant and border-related issues on this actually, both of these episodes that we're going to be covering. And so Alex has some complaints about Americans in Mexico.
A nation is not a nation. It's not a country, a sovereign entity, unless it has borders. I have lived my entire life in Texas. My ancestors fought and died and are on the memorial fighting the Mexican dictator Santa Anna. And when you go to Mexico, if you look like you have money, in some of the tourist areas, they leave you alone down south on the coast, but If you go down south over the Texas border, you'll be treated with hatred. You'll be called names by the police. They will rape your wife right in front of you.
I'm sorry, what?
They will beat you up. They will take you to the jail. They will extort hundreds of thousands of dollars out of you. This is what they do. In fact, almost everyone I know has been rousted, has been harried, has been fed on. If you try to come to their country illegal, you're lucky if they don't kick your guts out. But that's okay. That's loving and good. You're not going to find the ACLU or the Southern Poverty Law Center going after the corrupt officials over there.
Sure.
Wait, is his point we should treat them worse because their treatment is bad?
Well, I mean, I think you probably resist that phrasing. I think you would say we shouldn't treat them as well.
Right, right. But I mean, what he's saying is they treat them bad, so we should be more like the bad people.
Or they treat Americans bad, right. So we shouldn't treat them as well. Not that we should treat them worse.
No, that is exactly what not as well means.
Ah, no.
So they're the bad guys, we should also be the bad guys.
This
is his point.
A glass half full, glass half full situation.
I really feel.
Look, I know there's some crime in Mexico and some corruption, but I think Alex might be overselling things a little bit. He's acting like it's just a free-for-all purge.
You know, when they take the low road, we should destroy that road by building a tunnel underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Also, it's absolutely not the place of the ACLU or SPLC to step in with cases where an American citizen is detained in a foreign country. You don't have the same legal protections in other countries that you may have here, and your citizenship is not a shield that you can use to avoid other countries' laws. In a situation when a U.S. citizen is arrested in another country, they should contact the consulate or the U.S. embassy, who will be able to help them in some general ways and connect them with a local attorney who speaks English and go from there.
Way smarter.
The ACLU and SPLC are groups that are involved with civil liberties, which you don't necessarily have when you're on foreign soil, depending on what their laws are.
Yeah, that's an issue.
So Alex has this guy, Glenn Spencer, on.
Sure.
Who sucks.
Yeah.
He's been on before. We've talked about him a bit. He is a big-time piece of shit border vigilante-ish type.
Great.
He likes to fly drones around to try and find people crossing the border,
right,
and what have you, and then
so
sensationalize stories.
He's a guy trying to get a body count for himself.
Glass half full, glass half full.
Yeah, there we go.
So anyway, here he comes.
So here to talk with us for the next 25 minutes about this high treason and how the neocons are trying to spin this, it's just political, is Glenn Spencer of AmericanPatrol.com, the premier organization, no compromise, telling it like it is. Glenn, good to have you on.
Alex, good to talk to you again.
You know, we've been desensitized to this over the years, knowing that they were planning to... This isn't like the amnesties of the past, where they just give amnesty to those that are here. This is everybody in perpetuity. But this is finally getting the dumbbells to wake up, but now the neocons, some of them, are trying to pacify them. Give us the picture of what's going on.
Well, I think, you know, we saw it coming. We saw the trial balloons drifting through the clouds when Secretary of Homeland Security Ridge a few weeks ago said that these people should be legalized. We knew it was coming. Actually, I knew it right after George Bush was elected. When he said, we have to make, and this was in the newspapers 3 years ago this month, he said, we have to make migration safe and orderly. When I read that, I knew we were all in trouble. Since illegal immigration is already safe and orderly.
Sure.
At the time, he only could be talking about illegal immigration. And that, at the time, 3 years ago, told me that George Bush was an open borders globalist, ready to sacrifice the country on the altar of globalism. And I was right.
Wow, been proven right. What a shock.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So Glenn Spencer is an old-time xenophobic bigot, and his pretend concerns about immigration are not things I take particularly seriously. George W. Bush's presidency was a time of steeply decreased numbers of naturalizations of immigrants, and there was no massive amnesty offered to undocumented immigrants within the country like was done in 1986.
Yeah.
Until his fairly recent death, Spencer used drones and other tech to stalk and vigilante patrol areas around the border. He was a pile of shit. I've probably brought this up before, but just in case I haven't, I wanted to talk about a 2008 column he wrote for American Patrol. It's titled, quote, Speaking the Unspeakable, Is Jew-Controlled Hollywood Brainwashing Americans?
There we go. I was waiting for that.
In the piece, he claims that he used to hang out with Hollywood elites and dine with the likes of Harrison Ford. And though through that, he learned that all the Hollywood folks were actually America-hating globalist commies.
Yeah.
Seeing this the new Ford movie crossing over made him reflect on those days. And he opened up the paper,
So he's the only person who cared about the movie crossing over.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It made him wistful for those days when he dined with Harrison Ford.
One guy.
So he opened up the newspaper one day.
Sure.
After I had posted the story about Ford, I ran into an op-ed piece on the LA Times, How Jewish is Hollywood? In it, the Jewish author proves that Jews do in fact control Hollywood.
Sure.
The op-ed he's talking about is a satirical op-ed written by noted humorist Joel Stein. The article launches off from an ADL poll that found that only 22% of Americans thought Jews controlled Hollywood,
right.
And Joel thought that number was way too low.
Yeah.
One of the tip-offs that maybe this isn't an article you should be taking as a sincere source about anything is the clear humor-based tone, like in this part. Quote, I've taken it upon myself to reconvince America that Jews run Hollywood by launching a public relations campaign because that's what we do best. I'm weighing several slogans, including Hollywood, more Jewish than ever, Hollywood, from the people who brought you the Bible, and Hollywood, if you enjoy TV and movies, then you probably like Jews after all. He's clearly, and just look at the body of Joel Stein's work.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, yep.
So also, it's
if there's any evidence that satire means nothing, it's that people on the people who you're satirizing are like, I can't believe they would say this. I can't believe they would say something true like this. Yeah.
Also, it's worth noting that at the bottom of Spencer's article, he links to an article called, quote, Understanding Jewish Influence by a guy named Kevin McDonald, who's a real anti-Semitic piece of shit. McDonald once wrote, quote, Christianity was an uncontested part of public culture until large-scale Jewish immigration in the early 20th century. The immigration laws were biased in favor of Europeans until 1965, when the long Jewish campaign to change them finally succeeded.
Wow, and that's how Kids in the Hall came about, huh?
The reference to 1965 is about the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965, which many call the Hartzeller Act.
Uh-huh.
This Immigration Reform Act got rid of the national origins-based quota that was in place previously. Much of the ideology for the quota system was based on the then-popular ideology of eugenics and was meant to ensure an overwhelming white majority in the U.S. population continuously.
Yeah.
The new paradigm of immigration admissions was not designed to create a non-white majority in the U.S. In fact, there were attempts to place stipulations in the bill that they thought would limit the ability of the bill to increase non-white immigration. There were various little things that were slipped in. But in the end, it turned out there were a lot of people from the Eastern Hemisphere that were wanting to come here and were being barred from doing so based on blood quotas. And now that these blood quotas were gone, they were trying to come in to the land of opportunity. Anyway, the reason I bring this up is that it's a really big conspiracy in white nationalist and neo-Nazi circles that the Jews plan to use the Hartzeller Act to bring in masses of non-white people to the United States as an attack on the white population. It's a piece that's behind the great replacement type ideas.
Sure.
Anyway, this is clearly McDonald's point, and this implicates Glenn Spencer fairly heavily because his primary issue is harassing immigrants at the border. He has no relevance to any public conversation except in terms of immigration issues, so to see his article using Kevin McDonald as a source on how to understand Jewish influence, it's hard to believe that he doesn't also subscribe to some of McDonald's ideas about the Jewish influence on immigration law.
Yeah.
My point is that Glenn Spencer is at best a white nationalist who used a Joel Stein column he didn't get to justify publishing his own anti-Semitic trash. All in all, pretty perfect guest for Alex.
Yep.
Right on board with the InfoWar.
Yep.
Sucks.
A little too much in the wheelhouse.
And guess
it's,
what?
It's belt high. He's a belt high slow ball.
And guess what? He's the second worst border vigilante we're going to talk about today.
Great.
Yep.
I love people who are like, this arbitrary made up line of land that we stole from another country is mine by right, and I'll kill people for it.
Glenn wouldn't like that talk.
No, it makes perfect sense.
Now, I always like to see the positive in people.
I don't. But okay.
I know. And I actually agree with you, but I'm trying to set up a humorous premise.
I get it.
Much like Joel Stein might, satirically. So I'm trying to say something positive about Glenn Spencer, and that is he is one of the only guests that I've ever seen show up on InfoWars with clips ready.
Oh, he's done a homework.
He plays a clip.
He's done
Alex.
A homework show.
He's complaining about the former president of Mexico, he has a clip.
And what we have been talking about, you and I have been talking about for years, is the Mexican conquest of the Southwest. The conquest of Aztlan.
And their presidents say that.
Now, yes. And
in the land
they
own?
Don't believe it. Here he is. Here is the president of Mexico saying just that.
I proudly affirm that the Mexican nation extends beyond the territory enclosed by its borders, and that Mexican migrants are a very important part of it.
That was then-President Ernesto Zedillo of Mexico, 1997, speaking in Chicago.
I think Glenn's,
97!
I think Glenn's doing a better job of hosting than Alex is.
Well, there are worse, yeah.
So I went and I watched this whole speech, and the part that Glenn is using here is wildly out of context. He was talking about how the Mexican government has a duty to help protect the rights of immigrants to the United States from Mexico, and how he had just championed legislation to allow immigrants from Mexico to retain their Mexican citizenship, even if they pursue American citizenship.
Yeah, that's really smart.
So they can have dual citizenship.
That's really smart and good.
Glenn's interpretation of this as an admission that the former Mexican president wanted to use immigrants to recolonize the Southwest is way off base, and it's less informed by this speech and more by his flagrant hatred of non-white immigrants.
Yeah. You can't really recolonize something that you didn't colonize in the first place.
But has been colonized and...
Right. So you would be uncolonizing it.
Mm-hmm.
So that would probably undercut his argument that they're doing bad.
I don't think he would hear that argument.
I don't think he would either.
And we would be able to figure that out, but he died fairly recently.
So let me ask you a question, sir. Okay, so if Mexico does take, let's say, New Mexico, they take New Mexico, right? Okay, you would be mad that they took what you thought was your land, right?
Shouldn't
and you
Alex
would want
really,
to take it back.
Shouldn't Alex really want to change the name of New Mexico?
You would think.
Or maybe he thinks it's we've got the New Mexico as part of us.
It does feel a little bit weird for us to also have a state that's called New Mexico and be like, no Mexicans here. It's very weird.
Well, that's the way Alex and Glenn Spencer want it.
Yep.
Anyway, Glenn sucks.
Mexico has never had immigration. They've never been a melting pot. They've never brought in new ideas. And the one thing that ties the Mexicans together, that makes the Mexicans, is a common history. And they say, once a Mexican, always a Mexican. And one of the aspects of that history that stands out like nothing else is the war with the United States. And so, in essence, what they want to do is regain the glory of Mexico.
And regain
the glory of their ancestors by reversing the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo and making this the great and glorious Mexico that they think it should be.
Well, we took
their
land.
But Spain just came in as an empire, took over some Indians, claimed some land. France claimed parts of Texas. France isn't saying this belongs to them.
Neither is Spain.
Mexico for a while, you know.
So it's worth,
neither is Spain.
It's worth noting that Glenn is not talking about the Mexican government here. He's talking about the population only having war with the United States as their shared history to take on as an identity. This is obvious nonsense, but it's also worth pointing out that it's a tactic that Glenn is using to justify his racism as some kind of a defensive mechanism. It's pathetic.
Yeah. No. It makes sense to be like, oh, the only thing they have is shared history is you war with the United States, says I to that 3,000-year-old culture.
Also, it's just an unsolvable riddle why a colonized people in a former colonizing country would feel differently about their connection to a particular place. It's a real mystery why France wouldn't still be claiming that Mexico is a part of France, but people from Mexico might still have some feelings of ownership over Texas that was formerly where they were.
It does feel
mysterious. We may never get to the bottom of this one.
It is one of those where you're like, oh man, not even Bernard Blanc or whatever his name is.
The guy from Glass Onion?
Yeah.
Benoit Blanc.
Benoit Blanc, yeah.
Come on, man.
Bernard.
That is not.
I'm having a
that's
day.
That's not fancy enough.
I've been having a day.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yoga.
Yeah.
So, look, there's a lot of things that characterize Alex, and one of them is making things up.
Did you know that they allow Cinco de Mayo to be officially celebrated at UT, but not the Texas Independence Day? It's
what?
Evil. They don't allow it.
What
absolutely.
Are you talking
I mean,
about?
This is the kind of insanity that took over Nazi Germany, except in reverse.
Man. It's so fun, like, for Alex to just make shit up to pander to his audience that's desperately addicted to feeling like they are victims because they're white. The aggrievement is just spectacular and so powerful. For what it's worth, the tower on campus at UT Austin, the big, huge tower,
yeah.
it's lit with special lights, and a giant Texas flag flies on the pavilion for Texas Independence
yeah.
Day.
Yeah.
And they've celebrated that holiday for a long fucking time.
Yeah, that sounds right.
This is such an awesome story.
Okay.
In 1896, junior law school students at UT Austin, which at that time, the entire school had 482 enrolled students.
Uh-huh.
So these junior law students were pissed that it was a holiday and they still had to be in class.
Yeah.
So they decided to skip in honor of Texas Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, they tried to get the school to officially recognize the holiday and let them out of class, but the then president of the university was from North Carolina and didn't understand the dynamics. So, the students went and borrowed a cannon that was in front of the state capitol.
Sure.
Which is, it's pretty close to campus,
sure.
If you don't know the geography.
Yeah.
They brought the cannon to campus, where they planned to do a 21-gun salute for Texas Independence
with
Day.
With one cannon.
It'd take a while. I'll just read to you how that went from an article on the university's website.
All right.
Quote, just before sunrise on March 2nd, the students arrived for their celebration, only to find a large nail had been driven into the ignition hole of the cannon. It took some time and the employment of several pocket knives to remove the item. By then, Winston, who's the then president of the school, had arrived and was rather unhappily resigned to the fact that the students were going to celebrate. Hoping to minimize the damage to the class day, Winston asked the law school students,
sure.
to move the cannon away from the main building down the hill to the university's athletic field, or they could wait until afternoon to have their fun.
Excuse me. Pause real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, what?
You're going to shoot off
cannon.
This cannon?
Cannon?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
Here's our problem with the cannon. Wrong time.
It's
wrong time
loud.
Of day. Wrong time of day
Dude,
for this.
This is 1897. It's a different time.
I get it.
Starting at 9:30 a.m., an otherwise peaceful morning was interrupted by a series of cannon blasts.
Sure.
The entire law department attended, including Batts and Professor John Towns, and following the cannon fire, each person gave a short but sincere patriotic speech. Meanwhile, a distracted academic department continued to hold classes as best they could. The laws, though, weren't going to allow Texas Independence Day to pass without including the rest of the university.
Of course.
By 1 p.m., the cannon was positioned in front of the main building facing the Capitol.
Sure.
The first blast, quote, threatened to break every window in the building.
Yep. Yep.
All at once, the academs vacated their classrooms and joined the laws outside, and the scene of the morning was repeated with more speeches from students and professors.
Okay.
It's awesome.
So I recognize that when Mark said TV is the opiate of the masses, he was criticizing it. On the other hand, this is what happens if you don't have TV.
I thought...
If you don't have TV, someone's going to fire a cannon 21 times.
When you
That's going to happen.
When you said Mark's, I heard Mark, and I thought you meant Mark Bankston. I was like... Mark said
when our buddy Bankston first coined the phrase.
So in all the chaos, the president of the school had gone home.
Yeah,
he was just like, I'm out of here.
Yeah, fuck this noise.
And so when the students learned that he had left, they marched
they
over
to his
house.
Of course they
and
did.
And they insisted that he make a speech.
Again, they don't have TV.
Yeah. His opening line from that speech that he was forced to give outside his house by these students who had stolen a cannon and brought it to campus for Texas Independence Day begins as this, quote, I was born in the land of liberty, rocked in the cradle of liberty, nursed on the bottle of liberty, and I've had liberty preached to me all my life. But Texas University students take more liberty than anyone I've come in contact with. What a fucking awesome story.
Yeah.
It's a shame that Alex can't enjoy that without admitting that he's a lying pile of shit who just makes things up to inflame anti-immigrant sentiment in his audience. It's so great. Such a cool story. Alex didn't say that UT doesn't allow people to celebrate Texas Independence Day because he knew that as a fact, or he even had any solid backing to make the claim. He said it because it feels right to him that the students wouldn't be allowed to do that at school.
Right.
The school would outlaw this.
Because everyone is geared towards hating white people, right, no matter what.
Yeah. The climate of his narratives is one where white people are under attack and immigrants and non-white people are given special treatment. Thus, he takes every opportunity to throw out examples of that dynamic, regardless if they're real or not. And let's not forget what's behind Alex's desire to create this narrative climate. It's racism and xenophobia. Right. Full stop.
Yeah.
That's why he's coming up with this bullshit lie.
Yeah.
When in reality, I feel like he could incorporate into his worldview how cool it is that these guys stole a cannon.
I mean, they're fucking rebels.
Nuts.
They're rebels, man.
That's Texas.
That's the gall of Texas that you need, you know?
Yeah.
Deep at
night, the stars shine bright.
I think Rince accidentally said something. Yeah, I think Rince accidentally said something that makes perfect sense in the real world, which is that
Jeff Rince?
No. Oh shit! It's
Glenn
the guy.
Spencer?
Yeah. Glenn Spencer. Yeah. Sorry. I told you, I'm having a day.
Well, these names are bigots who it's hard to keep track of.
Yeah. But no, he said it's like what happened to Nazi Germany in reverse, which in a certain sense makes sense because it's not an expansionist, racist, destructive situation, and the bad guys are on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Like Glenn Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
So Spencer accidentally is like, we're like Nazi Germany in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nazis.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
But I'm still stuck on this story. And just imagining Alex saying that to somebody who's aware of like UT history and like, what the fuck are you talking about?
How long was that story?
What?
How long was that story?
I don't know. I mean, like if you wrote it out, probably like a page.
Yep. Can't read it.
Nope.
He'll never know.
I'll give you a headline. UT students pretty cool at the end of 1800s.
Totally. That's as good as he's going to get. He can't read a story as interesting as that without shitting his pants.
So Glenn Spencer, we bid adieu to him or goodbye because he only likes English.
Yeah.
But we get another guest, and that's Joel Skousen, who's obviously, we know, royalty of the anti-communists by virtue of him being the nephew of W. Cleon Skousen.
Yep.
And a long time, even fairly to the present day, although not maybe as regularly now as he has been in the past, but a guest who goes through all of Alex's career.
Yeah, no, his many different eras.
I'm not certain I've seen him in this era in 2003 yet or much. Maybe I've seen him once or twice, but I don't remember it.
Uh-huh.
And that made me really excited because I'm like, hey.
Sure.
I've got this familiar face.
We got early Skousen.
But then I realized he's so fucking boring, and it was just sour grapes.
Oh no!
It was just like
he didn't like have heat in his youth. He's still boring from the entire time. Brutal.
Yep.
Brutal.
But here's Alex's introduction for him, which I think is literally impossible.
There is so much news. We're joined by Joel Skousen. Joel Skousen is a political scientist by training, specializing in philosophy and law and constitutional theory. He's also the designer of high-security residences and retreats. He's a designed, self-sufficient, and high-security homes throughout North America, has consulted in Central America as well, and he's also a fighter pilot Vietnam.
There were no planes in Vietnam.
There were no planes in Vietnam.
He could not be a fighter pilot in Vietnam.
Already, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out on Skousen's bullshit resume.
Yeah.
CV.
Fraud.
Bullshit.
Right.
Yeah.
I am also surprised Alex didn't take the opportunity to bring that up. Like, hey, I had a caller not too long ago. There were no planes. You were in one of them, right?
That's like a regular thing.
I can't stop thinking about it.
Me neither.
But Alex doesn't bring it up. He should. Skousen, all that stuff in those credentials are mostly like he tells people how to bug out.
Yeah.
Basically.
So he's educated in philosophy, law, and political science. But his real talent is in designing security systems.
If you want a bunker.
Right.
Yeah.
That's an interesting pivot.
No, I mean, I think that's that's been a part of his career all along. Like,
okay.
He's a guy who's like, shit's going to go down eventually and you're going to need to hide in a hole.
Sure.
Let's make that hole pretty lavish.
That's what I learned from political science class.
Yeah. So, anyway, he's boring as hell.
Yep.
The only thing worth mentioning is that he could not possibly have been a fighter pilot because there's no planes.
No planes.
So, from here, we jump to the 12th. And Alex he wants to complain about Tony Blair, the head of the UK.
Yeah,
Prime
I'm fine
Minister.
With that. Go for it.
Blair said he would quit if people came up with some stuff that that he was wrong about.
Yeah.
And so now Alex is saying, why haven't you quit?
That's a good question.
Hey, it's a question maybe that needs an answer.
And then again last week he said that with the Dr. David Kelly inquiry, that if anything bad came out there, he would resign. But again, as bad stuff's already come out, why hasn't he resigned? I mean, bad stuff came out about Tony Blair and the death of Dr. David Kelly before.
At least it's a different song this
time. It is a different song. It is
the Renegades.
Yeah, I'll give
them
that.
Thank God for the Renegades.
It's not my song, but it's a good song.
Also, probably royalty free.
Yeah.
This is happening a bit now.
Yeah, it seems like the globalists are starting to take the picture seriously.
I think either Alex is the subject of a wire cutting attack that mysteriously the wire is replaced every day,
right,
or something,
I guess.
He really needs to do something about this tech. This is bad.
Yeah,
also it's weird that it's always at the beginning of the show. That is weird.
That is strange.
I don't know if that makes me think it's more likely sabotage or less likely.
I feel like it's more likely, because it's early on the show, it's more likely a producer is not great until, and then the they fuck up the levels over and over again. I think they're just bad at it.
I would suspect that it's something production-based.
Yeah.
Happening about the same time on these episodes.
Honestly, maybe their Wi-Fi is just bad. 2003 was terrible.
No, this is all wired. There's a wire that goes from Texas to
all
Minnesota.
All the way to Minnesota.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
So Alex comes back. He doesn't say this is a conspiracy, and he's also not chill. He's nothing. He pretends it didn't happen.
Yep. All right, that's new.
And now it's time to talk about the project for a new American century.
Sure.
Alex is real up in arms about this.
We have them all in dozens and dozens and dozens. There's several hundred PNAC reports, and I've probably read or scanned through about 60 or 70 of them. I've spent many hours reading PNAC documents. Every time I find some new indescribable horror, we'll post a link to the PNAC document from PNAC's own website, Project for New American Century. And then we'll watch it in the next few days and weeks develop into major news stories. Because the mainstream media, the Associated Press, Reuters, Gannett News Service, Knight Ridder, are so lazy, I have to go out and write an analysis of Patriot Act. I have to go out and find subsections of bills. You as listeners do that. Time and time again, you'll see it on the so-called alternative media, 6 months, 2 years, 5 years, before you see it in the mainstream news. So what is PNAC? It was Bush's kind of exploratory presidential committee that was formed in 1997 that wrote some of its most chilling forecast and wishes and plans in 2000. And in Rebuilding America's Defenses, written by Cheney and Rumsfeld, different documents on the PNAC website are collaborative efforts by different members of this administration and surrounding think tanks, phony neocon think tanks. And they say, word for word, Saddam is not a threat, but he is a convenient pretext to get the oil and to use Iraq as a new military base of operations to go into Syria and Iran.
I guess it's probably true that the Project for the New American Century probably did put out dozens, if not hundreds, of papers in their time, but there's zero chance that Alex has read more than one of them, and even that is suspect. The only thing he knows about is the only specific that he ever brings up, which is that Rebuilding America's Defenses paper.
Yeah.
If Alex had any actual interest in that document, he would know that at the end of the paper, there's a list of all of the participants in the project's meetings that led to the discussions that were then synthesized into this report. Neither Cheney nor Rumsfeld is on that list, but there are names that Alex associates with PNAC, so
sure,
they must be involved in everything that the group puts out.
Yeah.
The document does not say that Saddam doesn't pose a threat and he's just a useful excuse to go in and get the oil and establish bases to go into Syria and Iran. Alex claims that they say that word for word, which isn't even figuratively true. I think what Alex is misrepresenting is this passage from the document. Quote, indeed, the United States has for decades sought to play a more prominent role in Gulf regional security. While the unresolved conflict with Iraq provides an immediate justification, the need for a substantial American presence in the Gulf transcends the issue of the regime of Saddam Hussein.
Okay.
If you take that sentence in isolation, you may come away with the idea that Saddam is a piece of a larger puzzle, and that's pretty fair to the larger context of the paper. Thinking that what the authors are saying is that Saddam isn't a threat and is just a boogeyman used to justify invasion and plunder requires a reader to bring that preconception to the text itself.
Yeah.
It's a practice of eisegesis as opposed to exegesis, where you take the things that are in the text and pull them out. He's engaging in eisegesis where you have your own ideas and you bring them to the text and experience. Like, that's a good way to engage in, like, fiction review and, like, creative works. You discuss what the art evokes in you.
Sure.
That is not a good way to engage with this.
All right. So in critical theory, authorial intent has gone out of favor, mm-hmm. right? But in the nonfiction world, authorial intent still very important. Very important.
Right, because you're saying something and it's not like what this makes me feel is what they're saying.
Exactly.
That's complicated.
They're saying something very
specific.
Actually,
it's not. It's not complicated at all.
No, it's very simple.
Also, the word oil itself is never used in the paper, so I don't know where he's getting that. Syria is only mentioned once in this sentence. Quote, according to the CIA, a number of regimes deeply hostile to America, North Korea, Iraq, Iran, Libya, and Syria, already have or are developing ballistic missiles that could threaten U.S. allies and forces abroad. That doesn't say they're planning to invade them.
No.
Iran is mentioned a bit more and often as a potential future adversary, but nowhere do they say that they need to use Saddam as an excuse to create a base in Iraq in order to invade.
Sure. I mean, it's fairly innocuous to say that Iraq is part of the larger Middle East.
Right.
And that should be dealt with as a larger thing.
Yeah.
That's not complicated.
No.
It's very simple.
Here's the larger point, though, here. It's something that I've been stressing a bit lately because I think it's important. You can make a valid and compelling argument against the worldview and ideas that are expressed in Rebuilding America's Defenses, that document, without lying about it. But to do that, you need to do some work. You have to read the document, you have to consider the arguments, and formulate responses designed to show that the document itself is shit. That isn't super hard, but it's also not easy. Like, it's not something that you can just make up on the fly, and it's also a bit boring for an audience that likes excitement.
Yeah.
Instead of doing any of that stuff, Alex takes shortcuts. He makes up more exciting storylines about the document, like that it's a confession that Saddam wasn't a threat and it was just about oil.
Yeah.
He attaches popular, exciting names to the document who have no direct connection to it, like Rumsfeld and Cheney. He establishes the document inside of some giant body of supposed knowledge he has, where he claims he's read a ton of PNAC documents and they're all full of horrors, yet mysteriously he's only ever brought up this one.
Yeah.
Alex takes these shortcuts because he's not interested in the principle of opposing what's in that document. It's about the aesthetics of being against it, and about using the document to prop up the larger conspiracy worldview that he profits off of. It's important to understand this about his use of primary sources because, again, even if you rightly agree with him that PNAC sucks, you can't trust him to provide any real useful information to help you understand that subject.
Right.
Imagine yourself in a conversation with someone who disagrees with you about this PNAC document. If they know what they're talking about and you repeat some of these claims that Alex has made about the paper, you've lost the debate immediately. You've been equipped with useless and false claims that make it more difficult for you to effectively push back against the agenda that's embodied by the Project for a New American Century, which is a real shame, because Alex pretends he's doing the opposite of that.
Yeah.
It's actually making it harder for you to be an effective person working for change.
Right.
And that is not necessarily a coincidence. I don't know how much of that is intentional, like disempowering his audience.
Yeah.
But it feels like He can't not be aware of
it
that.
Do you know what it reminds me? It honestly reminds me, what he does reminds me so much of my joke writing process, where I would have the premise, and then I would have a punchline that I thought was good enough to work on, right? Mm-hmm. And then I would go up and I would riff out the middle bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I would try and find stuff that gets there. Maybe I'd find a tag. Maybe I'd find a punch, you know, all that stuff. And then I'd edit it down until it was tight. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even do the second part. He just riffs out where he wants to go until he gets there.
Yeah, but...
And that's not learning!
But it's also more serious than a joke, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a joke.
Yeah. Mm. All I could think about when you were saying that is, like, I just had a flash of...
How many terrible jokes I've written over the years?
No. No, I don't hate your jokes. Just mine. Yeah. No. Like, times when... Like, there have been a couple of times that this feeling comes back very viscerally of, like, being on stage and you have this punchline that you think is going to crush... And then you say it, and there's no response, and you realize that you missed a part of the setup.
Oh, that's like, the worst.
You guys would have got it if I had
the
given
worst.
You that piece of
the
information.
Worst,
that puts
the
all
worst
this
feeling in the world.
Because, like, you can't go back.
No.
You can't fix it.
It's great. It
sucks.
It's also a great feeling in a certain sense, because it's like, hey, listen, you guys came here to have a good time. I came here to be funny. I made the mistake on this one. You guys are totally justified in not laughing. Yeah. Totally get it, buddy.
Those looks you're giving me, earned.
Earned. Yeah. This is on me. Sometimes it's on you.
It is not a good feeling, though. I mean, it makes more sense than, like, you doing everything perfectly and then not liking
it. Right.
At least there's, like, okay, A to B to C. We get it.
Right.
But still sucks. Feels like shit.
Yeah. Because if you do the joke right and it doesn't work, then they don't like you. Mm-hmm. If you do the joke wrong and it doesn't work, then you just fucked up.
And
that's incompetent. That
experience of doing the joke right and them not liking you is basically how you would describe my entire career at the Laugh Factory. Every time on stage, people glaring at me.
I mean, listen, I'll tell you this. Club comic, you are not.
No. No. And not because I'm a comedian's comedian. That's not it either. Just not...
There's tricks.
Anyway, the PNAC document. Alex has some more things to say about it, which are not true.
Rebuilding America's Defenses, 2000. What else is in that document? Dick Cheney talks about maybe we need to legitimize the use. He doesn't say maybe. He says we need to legitimize the use of race-specific bioweapons.
Sounds weird to say out loud.
And legitimize their use in the media. Race-specific bioweapons. I mean, what a little jewel that is. Can you imagine if you or I got on the radio or wrote a news article about how maybe we should develop race-specific bioweapons and legitimize their use? I would expect I'd have the FBI, Mr. Jones, get out here. We got questions for you. Get out here. We're knocking down the door. See, we had a real FBI. That's who they'd
crazy.
Be after. But no,
so
we're not saying that.
Say
we're
it.
Not writing that. We're not doing that. We're fighting against that. But the vice president says we need to legitimize the use of race-specific bioweapons with the public. Do you know what a race-specific bioweapon is? I know most of you do. It's a bioweapon that kills certain races of people. Again, I mean, that's so
Thanks
big,
for explaining it.
That's so evil, that's so out of control, so overt, I don't have words to describe it.
I have a word to describe it. Not true.
Yeah,
like,
I
it's
mean,
not accurate. Again, it's this, if you think that this is true, and you approach anybody who knows anything about this, it doesn't say that. That is not true. That is absolutely
it's just
wrong.
Not hard.
Yeah. You are not dealing with the text as it exists.
Yeah.
And so then you would be left in a situation where you'd have to become defensive and insist that it does exist. And in order to do that, you have to completely misrepresent passages of the text, or you have to wrestle with it, which is a little bit more difficult. And then you realize Alex is full of shit and you can't listen to him and you can't rely on him to give you any accurate information.
Yep.
That's what you should do.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the easiest thing in the world is also one that is very, very difficult, which is if somebody comes to you with something that is structured like this, if I did this, I would be arrested instantly, and he gets to away with it, there's a good chance that they didn't do it because they wouldn't get away with it. They would also be arrested.
Yeah, a lot of the time that is, especially when you're talking about advocating for race-specific bioweapons, when you're in that kind of a territory, generally.
So a reasonable person has to respond to that
also,
with, like, no.
Pump the fucking brakes. Alex would not be arrested for that.
I think, also, is he against race-specific bioweapons?
I don't have evidence that he is for them, so I'm not gonna agree with you there.
That's fair.
But it would be within his free speech to advocate for race-specific bioweapons. He just couldn't be specific about it.
Yeah.
He couldn't be like, all right, Tuesday at 4, we're meeting to cook up to the...
Yeah.
Like that, you know, the incitement of it would be, you know, like Brandenburg versus Ohio.
Right.
He's going to get away with a lot.
Right. And also, like, just to be pretty clear about humanity, I don't think you could make a race-specific bioweapon on account of we're all the same race.
There are some problems with that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop racists for thinking about it a lot.
I mean, it. In fact, I think that would probably be the best way to truly prove that there's no real difference between
quote-unquote
races.
Let's not do that to prove that. That seems like a flawed plan.
All right, but the 15 people left behind would have to be confronting the fact that there's no races.
Well, they would get it, and the lesson would be learned. So we have another guest coming in here on the 12th.
Yeah.
It's a character named Jack Foot. This guy's a bad dude. He's the guy who started the Foot Clan.
I was about to make a Foot Clan joke, and you got there first.
He is a ninja.
You son of a bitch.
He is.
You bastard.
Yeah, he's the mortal enemy of the Ninja Turtles.
Naturally.
And boy, right, I can't believe Alex would platform a guy like that.
No, I'm telling you. I mean, later on, he killed Master Splinter.
Unbelievable. Ugh. No, in reality, he's another border vigilante.
Yeah, that sounds right.
He sucks. He's the worst.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's going to be coming on.
Sure.
And in advance of this, Alex gets a call from a guy who has a question about him, and it's a problematic question.
Well, I was listening to that ranch rescue guy on the National Alliance show, and it's like pathetic that the government won't even help these poor people that are volunteering to try to keep these people out. It's like a dam bursting.
Nope, that's wrong.
On their private property, and the government doesn't help them at all. They're asking for donations, which, you know, is pretty pathetic if that's the kind of border we have. And
let's be clear, Batman is a villain.
All right, well, thank you for the call. I know Jack Foot, and Jack Foot is I've talked to him many times on the phone. He's not a racist. And I would imagine he didn't know what show he was going on if he went on the National Alliance.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, the great classic excuse that this guy whose entire life is based on being a violent vigilante against immigrants on the southern border had no idea who the National Alliance was.
No clue.
That is very, very believable.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to just guess that this is the same excuse Alex is going to have for why this dude went on shows of noted bigots and anti-Semites like Clay Douglas and Hal Turner as well. He just didn't know any of them were.
You know, he's like the racist Mr. Magoo, just kind of wandering on to shows left and right.
Yeah. Jack Foot is going to be Alex's guest on this episode, and he's a real piece of shit. Just like Glenn Spencer, who Alex had on the previous day's show, Foot has decided to be a vigilante and take policing immigration into his own hands. He was the head of a group called Ranch Rescue, which is not at all like Bar Rescue. Instead of yelling at failing bar owners, what Foot would do is create militarized compounds on people's ranches and wait for immigrants to cross through the property, at which point they were apprehended or kidnapped, depending on your perspective, terrorized, generally threatened with death, often assaulted, and then turned over to law enforcement. Or at least that last step is what the group would like the story to be, since there's no real way to tell if they didn't follow through on some of those death threats.
Yeah!
There are plenty of unsolved murders of border crossers, and as the ADL has reported, in many cases, when these immigrants have been found murdered, they're bound, as if they had been apprehended prior to being killed.
Cool, 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 cool.
Anyway, Foot may or may not be a murderer, but his group is absolutely in the business of terrorizing immigrants. As luck would have it, Ranch Rescue terrorized the wrong people in March 2003 when they did their usual routine with a group of 4 Mexican immigrants on March 7th and then with 2 Salvadorans on March 18th. These immigrants went on to sue, and a judge ruled in their favor, ordering Foot to pay $500,000 and turning over possession of the 70-acre ranch they were operating out of over to the Salvadoran victims.
Hey, now that's the shit right there.
They took ownership of that ranch and had said that they were they're going to sell it and give the proceeds to immigrant charities.
Yeah. Yeah, good.
Jackfoot sucks, his group sucks, and Alex is making a real pattern of platforming, elevating, and promoting people who are actively terrorizing people at the border. He is desperate, too, to whitewash their associations with legit Nazis, like he does here, making up that Foot must not have known who the National Alliance was. Get the fuck out of here with that shit. Mm. Alex knows damn well that this dude knowingly went on that Nazi show. It's just not good for his brand to know that. So he lies to the audience to get them to accept this bigot on false pretenses.
Right.
Because he knows that there's at least some of the audience that doesn't want to recognize how closely associated they are with white supremacists and Nazis.
Right. You want to think he's above the left-right paradigm instead of below it with the rest of the fucking Nazis.
Yep.
Yeah.
So he Foot is going to come on here in a little bit, but first we get a call from Dan in Illinois. And man,
you're a traitor, Dan.
This guy sucks.
Yeah,
but we're not going to listen to his call. Alex is just going to discuss his call here.
Okay,
and this is just dumb.
We were just talking to Dan in Illinois, and then we'll go to these other calls. Dan in Illinois was saying, "Well, hey, you know, these corporations are so corrupt, using the government to control us. We've got to pass regulations to control them." But understand the fallacy of that. You don't have the lobbyists. You don't have the payoff money. You don't have your people controlling the government, staffing the government. So if you try to get the government to pass regulations, they'll go, okay, and they'll pass more regulations for you. The only way to stop these big corrupt corporations that are organized crime syndicates, not free market, is to restrict the size of state, local, federal, international government, because those are the mechanisms of control. This should make perfect sense, but I was explaining that to Dan, and he still, I don't think, completely got it.
No, I get it. I get it. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
That's absolutely dumb.
Yeah.
So what you'd want to do in order to reel in these corporations is decrease the power and ability of the government to reel in these corporations. Because as soon as those corporations are free and unfettered from these regulations and the binds that the government can put on them,
right,
they'll start doing the right thing. They won't be the only unchecked power around.
Well, I mean, you have to think of it this way.
Do you
right?
think that fucking Elon Musk wouldn't have, like, his own army if he could?
Here's what the way you got to think about it, right? So if the government has power, then the government is ostensibly accountable to the people.
And who is the government?
Right.
People
now,
who are elected into these,
And I think you're thinking of this backwards, because if we remove the power of the government, accountable by the people, ostensibly, and give all that power to corporations, accountable to only their shareholders and other billionaires, then we are going to get a more equal society.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order for capitalism to work, it's a bad idea to enslave. No, slavery is great for capitalism. Never mind. They'll enslave people.
Yes.
That's what they'll do.
But
they'll make slaves.
But here's the great news.
Yeah.
If this one company enslaves a bunch of people,
sure,
you can just not buy their stuff.
Right.
The power of the dollar.
Right. But what if it was like Walmart?
Well, then just don't go there.
Mm. Seems difficult.
This is exactly the kind of dumb thinking that you would express if you were really just trying to maximize corporate power.
Yeah.
While knowing that that's not popular among people.
Yeah.
So you want to give the pretense that, like, this will diminish corporate power,
right,
by removing one of the largest obstacles that stand in corporations' way.
Right, because here's the thing that's a tough sell. Okay, so here's Alex's real argument, okay? I want slavery because I won't be a slave in this world, right? That's a tough sell to the 99% of people who are going to be slaves.
True.
That's hard to sell them on.
Right. And the real issue is that there is ineffective and maybe not the best focused regulation of corporations that is being done by the government.
Right.
Not that that regulation exists.
Right. Ironically, Alex got everything he wanted in Citizens United.
Ironically.
Ironically.
So, time to join the Foot. This guy sucks.
Well,
For those that don't know what Ranch Rescue is, describe the organization, what you do, then we'll get into the Mexican troops firing at your members.
Briefly, Ranch Rescue is a property rights advocate, and everything we're going to talk about today is available to your listeners on our website at www.ranchrescue.com. www.ranchrescue.com. We are conducting phase two of Operation Thunderbird here on private ranch in Cochise County, Arizona. Your listeners may recall Cochise County, Arizona is the number one illegal border crossing point into the United States and has been for the past 5 years. On December 20th, our volunteers were conducting a reconnaissance patrol in the southern part of our host's land, which is right up next to the border road. Mexican troops, armed and in uniforms, OD Green uniforms and OD Green Kevlar helmets, crossed onto our host's property and were challenged verbally by our reconnaissance team. The Mexican troops, there was about 10 of them, we estimate. We know for certain there were two in the lead with AK-47 and RPK machine guns. The rest of them retreated back into the wood line, and after they got themselves into a concealed position, they fired on our volunteers. Unfortunately, none of our volunteers were hit.
I absolutely do not believe this.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't believe that, but even if so, yeah, cool. I mean, if you go out with guns and somebody fires at you, you also have to take some responsibility for that.
I don't believe that these Mexican troops were there.
I don't believe they existed either.
Yeah.
But even if they did, I don't believe he has the right to complain about it.
I think it becomes far more complicated because why are they there? Are they there under the auspices of the Mexican government?
Totally.
Are they there by accident? Is it possible that they are like 2 feet over the border
are
and they don't know where
night?
The
yeah.
border is?
Totally.
The border is not like spray painted across the entire...
Again, it's an imaginary arbitrary line that
right.
we all pretend is real.
There are some places where it probably could be like, I'm not sure where the line is exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't believe any of this happened.
Yeah.
But Operation Thunderbird is pretty good.
Again, if you are doing an Operation Thunderbird and someone shoots at you, you have it coming.
You know the only
that is you earned it.
You know the only Operation Thunderbird I like was when they recorded that song by Mark Cohn. The follow-up to, or I don't know, maybe it came out before it, but the only other song I know by him other than Walking in Memphis.
Sure.
Silver Thunderbird.
Mm.
Lord, I want to go down. The Silver Thunderbird. It's a song about his dad's car.
This is a heavy singing episode for you.
Yeah, I know. Actually, I got self-conscious about that as soon as I brought it up.
You were like, ooh, maybe three is too many.
Mm-hmm.
The rake effect is not in effect.
Let me go back to rent.
Yeah, see, now we're back, baby.
So Alex brings up the fact that he was interviewed on the National Alliance.
Right, right, because he's a Nazi.
Well, you got to get this confirmation that he didn't know what he was doing.
Get
he
out in front of being a Nazi.
Right, well, I mean, it was brought up on the show earlier.
Sure.
So his answer isn't good.
Now, I know you've done a lot of radio interviews.
Well, I heard one of your listeners earlier ask about my interview on National Alliance.
Yes. I was about to
For the record. I am very aware, and I was aware before I did this interview, of the controversy that would happen from me being on this particular source. However, I was also interviewed by Hal Turner a couple of years ago, and on that same day, I was interviewed by CNN. I no more subscribe to the Hal Turner's viewpoint than I do the Ted Turner's viewpoint.
That's all cute and all, but there's a big difference between being on a Nazi show and being on CNN.
Yeah.
If you're being interviewed on CNN, odds are that it's at best a neutral interview, and at worst, if you're Jack Foote, it's an adversarial interview that makes you out to be a crazy racist vigilante. Your presence on the network isn't going to be used to grow or help CNN. It's going to be an interview.
Right. I mean, when we went on, we got Stelter fired. So.
True. That was oof.
CNN should not help anybody.
No. Conversely, if you go on the National Alliance radio show, you're going to be used to perpetuate Nazi shit. Your entire worldview is about how immigrants are an invasion coming into the country to attack the existing white population, and this conversation will be right at home in white supremacist and Nazi circles. You're not going to get a neutral interview there. In fact, you're going to be treated as a hero, standing up for the white race. And it should come as no surprise that that's exactly how the National Alliance interview went. He was interviewed by National Alliance founder and Holocaust denier Kevin Alfred Strom, who was good friends with John Birch Society founding member Revilo P. Oliver.
Hey, great!
Also, Strom went to jail after pleading guilty to possession of child exploitation material in 2008, so cool.
Great.
The interview is downright fawning, and it ends with Strom saying this, quote, It's the mission of the National Alliance to make the facts of this invasion and the racial and cultural change it represents known to white Americans and to translate that knowledge into political and social change. Enforcing the law is not enough, though we must demand that it be enforced, and I wish that Ranch Rescue was 10,000 times larger than it is now, or that Mr. Foote ran the Border Patrol so it was done properly. The only solution that will work is when white living space. Until we have our white living space, I'm glad we have men like Jack Foote who are working within the system, though that system fights them at every turn to stop these criminals. You can just give me a break with this going on CNN is the same as being celebrated by Nazis bullshit. The only thing that Foote said in that last clip that matters at all is when he said he was aware of the National Alliance and what they believed when he agreed to be on that show. At that point, he was consciously using his vigilanteism and almost certainly fake heroic stories about border confrontations to appeal to the white supremacy of their audience. Fuck you, Jack Foote. I wish you were a ninja.
Yeah.
I wish you just had killed Splinter.
I wish that the Mexican army had showed up at that border.
This story is not true.
Mm-hmm.
So Alex is thinking like, all right, well, you got shot at by these troops.
Fake.
I'm going to go ahead and, you know, leave that whole National Alliance thing on the side here. But you got shot at by these troops. What happens next time, man?
So what are your guys going to do the next time Mexican troops shoot at them? I know if Mexican troops were shooting at me, I know what I'd do.
Well, like I said, I commend the individual patrol team leader for his discretion and his restraint.
So, man, so restrained.
Yeah,
here.
It was really easy.
It's weird how he spoke a little differently to the Nazis. From that other interview, when he was asked how they deal with Mexican troops, he said, quote, "We fire them up. No warning, no requests. If they're armed and in uniform and obviously a foreign military unit, then we open fire." So strange, almost like he knows how to tailor a different message to different audiences. Also, it's weird how this whole interview with Alex is about protecting America from illegal immigration at the border, but it doesn't come up how Ranch Rescue has one chapter outside the United States in South Africa. You better believe that comes up when Foote is talking with the Nazis, though. He even tells them, quote, "We are facing, eventually, the same sort of crime wave that was happening in Rhodesia in the 1970s. Huh. Weird.
Yeah.
Seems like maybe, just maybe, these folks are primarily racist vigilantes who like to make their actions seem less despicable by pretending they're fighting a defensive battle against the Mexican military, when in reality, most of what they're doing is terrorizing and abusing scared, vulnerable immigrants."
Yeah.
Fuck you, Jack Foote.
Yeah, buddy. Boy, I will tell you this. You're not the first person to say that white people need space. And the last time it happened, they took a fuck ton of space.
Well, that was
they?
Strom, to be fair, not Foote, just to be clear.
Well, fine.
I just don't want to misattribute
sure.
the quote.
Fair enough. I would hate for that Nazi to be mistook as a Nazi.
Glass half full.
Glass half full.
So one thing that might be able to convince me that this confrontation with the Mexican military happened is if there was a police report that backed it up. Some
sure.
kind of official documentation.
I mean, you would think if the Mexican army attacked you, that would be
an international incident.
Absolutely, at least.
It would probably require an explanation from the Mexican government,
yep.
an apology, some yep. kind of a recompense.
Yep.
But unfortunately, they never called the police.
Oh, surprise.
Now, did you make the police come out and do a report?
Not for this particular incident. There was no point to it. We didn't have any physical evidence.
Yeah, the Mexican army firing on us.
Of our volunteers who had been fired upon.
Real quick, we had no physical evidence. What about the bullets?
No, you can't find bullets. They fired the bullets into a tree, and
right.
the tree can't release
all right,
the bullets.
Bro. All right, fine.
Yeah.
It would have been a,
but I mean, it's not like
you're,
sir. It's not like this isn't happening. We have them running over fences.
He says
chasing
lying.
Border Patrol 7 miles and shooting their vehicles full of holes and right. killing people.
Right. We'll be happy to call the sheriff of the county and bring him out here just as soon as we've got something physical to show him. Now, we either will capture these criminal terrorists vertically or we will capture them.
Why do you think? Why do you think they shot at you?
Because they can. They, because
I don't
know
probably because you deserve
even
it.
Even if they hit one of us, if they commit a murder inside the United States, they can run back into Mexico, and Mexico will never extradite them to face either the life or the death penalty.
And then it makes
States.
It also there's a government, and this has been out there. I've talked to one of the top Border Patrol people here in Texas. He's one of my dad's patients. He said, "Oh yeah, there's a $200,000 bounty on Border Patrol." But yeah, Bush is down there. Bush is down there in a love fest with Vicente Fox right now.
If there's any kind of a bounty on Border Patrol people, it's not coming from the president of Mexico.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. Also, I thought your dad was a CIA dentist. Now, apparently, top Border Patrol.
Hey.
It's amazing how many people go to him for dental
care. They have a lot of hats.
It's almost like Alex just has a real convenient excuse for how he gets all this intel from top-level people.
Yep.
They all go to get dentistry from a big... big, strong, smartest boy in Texas dad.
Doesn't matter.
It's all fucking bullshit.
Doesn't matter if there's stuff in their mouth. They're still giving out secrets to the dentist. They can't help themselves.
And look, I think that there is a possibility that if somebody who was just a civilian person, unrelated to the Mexican government, came across the border and shot someone and then disappeared back into Mexico.
Right.
That would be difficult.
Right.
First of all, figuring out who they are would be difficult. Second of all, extradition might be complicated even if they did figure out who they were.
Right.
If it was a member of the Mexican military in fatigues, you in like formation with other military members, it would be a gigantic deal.
Oh, yeah.
You would not just be able to dip across the border unless there was an active military attack being carried out by Mexico, which the United States would then... have to respond in kind.
It would be war. A big deal.
Maybe it wouldn't be war, but it would be close.
It wouldn't be war, but there would have to be like all the posturing. There would have to be all the bullshit to make them not look weak or whatever the fuck dumb shit they do.
It would be a gigantic deal.
Oh my God.
Anyway, fuck you, Jack Foot. You suck.
I mean, it's so funny how much I remember from this time period, like the bloodthirstiness with which everyone was treating quote unquote terrorists. And everybody's like, well, you can't be mean to these guys.
Right.
Why would we be unhappy with terrorists who live inside our borders and terrorize people that we don't like?
Yeah,
who fucking cares?
Yeah, I think a lot of people had a difficult time disassociating themselves from terrorists that they would associate with. You know, it's the same thing with that Jack Bauer nonsense with torturing on 24 and what have you.
Totally.
Not dealt with emotionally or ethically the same way that if it wasn't someone that... you, as a white American, associated with being on your side, be more complicated.
I mean, it seems so silly considering we celebrate terrorism once a year as a national holiday.
Arbor Day.
That's our best.
So we have one last clip here, and as I promised, fantastic clip. And that is because Jack Foot is gone, and Alex takes calls to close the show.
Hey.
Mic down for this,
okay.
Because this is...
you've teased it out. We're finally here. Okay.
This is...
here we go.
Unbelievable.
Another thing I wanted to mention was you mentioned about Bush. Recently I saw WWE had a wrestling set up where they went over to Iraq. In the background, they're panning through the crowd of soldiers watching the wrestling. And there's two or three guys holding up a sign that says Bush 316.
Okay, and what does that mean?
I think it's a biblical reference.
I believe it is, too.
Just a little odd.
John 3:16, or?
But it was actually Bush 3:16.
Or is it Romans? It's
John,
my mind.
It's John 3:16.
What?
And what does John 3:16 say?
I think it's the way to know
the
Father is through the Son. Something like that.
No.
Alex
doesn't know
John 3:16.
No. All Christians can go fuck themselves. Fuck all of you. All of you. Go fuck yourselves. Go fuck the book. Fuck you. If I know more about the goddamn book than somebody screaming about how it's okay to kill trans people because
neighbors.
Of the fucking book.
Neighbors.
Sorry. Sorry.
I understand the righteous indignation there, though. I was speechless that he's like, wait, is that Romans? Like, that's unbelievable.
No.
And also that he doesn't know Austin 3:16 says, I just kicked your ass.
I mean...
He doesn't know about Stone Cold.
At the very least, know John 3:16.
But shouldn't he have been previously mad about Stone Cold, doing scripture as his catchphrase?
I suppose.
Like, Stone Cold Steve Austin was one of the biggest cultural phenomenon. Like, wrestling was at its peak.
Yeah.
Everyone was talking about how it's degenerate for these DX people to do the suck it.
They threw a beer to this man and he crushed it and chugged the whole thing. He's a monster.
He's the Texas rattlesnake.
He's everything
Stone Cold,
to Texas.
Yeah. Character. Oh. He's right in Alex's wheelhouse.
Oh my God.
And he should have been furious that his whole catchphrase and all the shirts that everyone wore said Austin 316
on it. I mean,
it.
It's the obviously.
Yes.
It's obvious.
And Alex doesn't know that, but then also doesn't know
I just can't know more about your fucking book than you.
Did that live up to my tease?
It did.
It's pretty
I'm
wild.
I'm furious beyond all reason. Mm-hmm. Like I'm you can see me holding my hand up like this.
Yeah.
I'm furious.
It's great.
Oh my God. Also, I'm furious about the Bush 316 too.
Yeah, but
I'm
pretty
furious about that. I can't go back 20 years and do something about it, so I'm not going to be too mad.
If you're talking about USO shows and stuff like that,
yeah.
A little bit of jingoism is going to be there.
What are you going to escape it? No.
Right.
No, it's not like everybody's going to be like conscientious objector 316. That's not going to happen.
Right, and if you want sanity and nuance,
sure,
don't go to the WWE.
Probably not the best place for it.
No.
Ryback is from the future and he drinks fear. I get it.
Ryback hasn't been around for a long time.
I know.
Why are you referencing Ryback?
Because he's from
Ryback?
The future.
Interesting.
And if that's a storyline, I'm not going to be able to accept that.
I don't know if Ryback was around in 2004 either.
That's fair.
Anyway, look, here's the deal. I would love to hear what Alex thinks about the Saudi Arabian shows that WWE has done.
That is kind of... Now I want to hear more about... I want to hear him riff more about stuff he doesn't know about
the Crown
wrestling.
Jewel is...
Yeah. If you're going to make stuff up, do it about wrestling. That's great. You'll get a storyline in 5 years.
But here's the problem.
Yeah.
Alex doesn't make anything up here. He's just confused by this, which is sad.
Oh, my God.
God so loved the world!
That's about as good as I can do with
Stone
Cold.
He should have got really defensive about Jake the Snake. Because Jake the Snake was super religious.
He should have gotten really offended about not knowing the fundamental fucking verse.
It is the most popular verse. But see, at the King of the Ring tournament, right? Uh-huh. Stone Cold beat Jake the Snake. And Jake the Snake was a fairly religious person at this time.
Sure.
His character.
Yeah.
And so when he was giving a promo afterwards, John 3:16 may save the first soul. God so loved the world he gave his only begotten son, but Austin 3:16 says I just whipped your ass.
Okay, that's pretty good.
And that's how the catchphrase started. Yeah. And pissed off all of the
evangelicals. That's perfect. Well,
oh, hell yeah,
well done, Stone Cold.
Yep. And he inspired a generation.
He did something. He had an impact. Stone Cold had a full-on cultural impact that I think people do kind of a little bit underplay.
No, it's something we'll have to wrestle with, pun intended.
Yeah, exactly.
In the future. Anytime anybody hears glass break, you just look around.
Totally.
You're about to get stunned.
I have not watched wrestling much in 20 years, and I still remember the exact sound of glass breaking. I know that sound effect. I've heard it in other shit since then. I've been like, Stone Cold's gonna show up.
And they've Pavlovianly trained that, like, when that glass breaks and someone's about to get their ass kicked.
Yep.
Someone's in trouble.
Totally.
Anyway.
So good.
Alex didn't know about Austin 316, didn't know about John 316.
Again, every Christian can go fuck themselves. I can't believe this. I'm so mad.
Don't blame every Christian for Alex.
It's not their fault.
Look, just because Alex is a phony sort of representative of a group doesn't mean that all people who are members of that group deserve the derision that you should direct at Alex.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just say, calm down.
Fine.
Anyway, this is that brings us to the end of our little 2004 jaunt.
Man, you did not over-tease that clip.
That clip's amazing, and it's.
That's going to stick with me as much as there are no planes over Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know Austin 316 and there were no planes over Vietnam.
And he doesn't know John 316.
And he doesn't
probably
know,
more
you
important.
You know what? Now I've let that one go.
Okay.
You've convinced me to let that one go.
Fair enough.
So that's what I've got. Okay.
I think even more interestingly, though, is this. Clearly, there's a season going on, or a little bit of an arc of just a lot of agitation against immigrants, and it's pretty gross. And you can see very clearly, like, these people that he has on who are people who are on the ground terrorizing immigrants.
Yep.
They are people who have very direct associations with Nazis. And this is 2004, Alex. His career has always been in that lane. And people would be wise to recognize that.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's really hard to have this from like 20 years ago, because it is just like, oh, every time they want something, they just blame a new group.
Mm-hmm.
They just pick, oh, today it's immigrants. We hate them. They're all evil. Let's kill them at the border. Tomorrow it's gay people. We hate them. They should never be married. Let's kill them. The next day it's trans people. Yeah, fuck them all.
There's
kill
convenient
them.
Scapegoating of groups that they feel they can get away with demonizing.
But over and over and over again. And that people don't recognize the pattern drives me fucking insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, hopefully one day. Anyway, we'll be back, Jordan.
Indeed we will.
But until then, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yes. We also are on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight.
Yeah, we'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I am going to get this as a family crest. Oh, you know what? Eh.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.